hearing you clicking about.
No, I'm getting Notion. I'm getting Notion. I'm closing stuff and getting Notion open.
You're still clicking.
Hang on, here you go. Look.
The clicking has stopped. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Lydia.
It feels like it's been... So much has happened since the last time we spoke.
Yes.
I think it's the Demofest effect, which I will talk to you about in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I want to share something with you, which is that if at some point in our lives, me and my partner go traveling somewhere with you and your missus and the kids, please be aware that there is a non-zero chance that we might get kicked out of the hotel for breaking the IT systems. We are I realized yesterday that me and my partner are hotel IT nightmare fuel, because that's what happens when you land two network engineers into hotel room where an attempt was made to make things, you know, secure in a way that your average user wouldn't be able to break anything, but someone with a little bit of knowledge can be very dangerous. We may or may not have broken Wi-Fis in previous hotels, not in this one, but in previous hotels, and obviously we did not say a word to anyone about that. To give you like a little bit of an idea, like why are we nightmare fuel? We came in and the first thing we did is trying to figure out how to hack through the TV's like hotel overlay. Because mm-hmm. We always bring in a Chromecast with us because mm-hmm. we want to stream our own stuff. And mm-hmm. this particular TV had a overlay that you couldn't change the input. Most hotels, you can easily just change the input from TV to, you know, HDMI. And, you know, especially with the Chromecast, that solves that problem. That did not happen with this one. Thus, we began a series of unplugging and plugging things in and going through menus and trying and finding secret codes to actually... remove the hotel overlay. You look disappointed, didn't
you? No, it's funny because I do the same.
Okay, cool.
Probably not to the same extreme, as in when we were on holiday a couple of weeks back, the single best thing that I took, which was one of the last things I packed, was the Amazon stick. Same thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because I have seen the Shaun the Sheep film more times than I would care. But it meant that my children were calm.
Yep.
It's you know, home comforts. I genuinely, it must have been like six when I first started seriously traveling for work. A colleague of mine said, get obviously Chromecast and the like 20-30 pounds sticks that you can just plug into HDMI, because he said all TVs have a HDMI
mm-hmm.
and there will be a way to get it to work. Oh no, I'm the same as you. I have found ways to do this, including maybe unscrewing the casing around the back of the TV to find the ports to plug into. And also, every TV has manual buttons mm-hmm. on it that you can find. And one of those will be the input button.
Yeah. I'll do you one better. With okay. this one, there was a code. There was a secret code, like an old Mortal Kombat game, where you had to like click the right combination of keys on the remote, and that brought you into the outside of norm menu that you can actually go in and enable additional inputs.
Oh wow! They were just wow.
Yeah.
Proper demo mode.
Proper demo mode, and that was pretty fun to discover. The other thing, I'm pretty sure this is something that we might do one step above you, which is, do you bring your own router with you?
I do not.
But yeah, so we're this type of travelers that, especially when it's the two of us, we become an absolute like nightmare, because we keep on feeding each other. Because with me, when I was traveling by myself, it was more of a, ooh, is this simple, right? Can I just plug in the Chromecast? Will it work with the hotel Wi-Fi? If it works, great. If it doesn't, you know, I'll just use whatever screen I have brought with me, because I always travel at least with a laptop. And that's going to be my entertainment for the evening, right? And then that's it. I wouldn't be too bothered. But my partner is very adamant about making hotel networks bow to their knees in front of him. Whatever, any hotel, he's like, I am going to figure this out and it's going to bend to my will. He doesn't use those specific words in particular, but that's what I hear every time he goes like, I'm going to figure it out. And I'm like, oh yeah.
I know. I mean, in the best way, I've worked with those types of people, in the types of people that spent a long time setting up and configuring these like very intricate home networks and kind of the kind doing the kind of things that you can actually now largely do with the kind of off the shelf routers that get sent out. But before you could do it, right? There's always a thing to push to. There's an extreme to push. For me, one thing I still will do, have not yet done, is on my list to do. Eventually, is just get a home NAS and set that up, because it's like I it's funny though, the case for doing it was more compelling like 5 years ago when I originally thought about doing it, when I still have all my physical media, and I was like, oh, I'll do this, I'll set it up and I'll stream to my TV. Now I'm kind of like, I either don't have time to watch it, or I have managed to, my thing of bending the will of corporations is never paying full price for a streaming service, or as best I can avoiding paying full price for certain streaming services, and never having all of them at the same time. So I'm that like nightmare customer who, with Netflix, okay, that's the kind of the default example. Advice for anyone out there, if you have a Netflix account and you're thinking, I've not really used my Netflix account for a while, but I don't want to cancel it, I don't want to lose all my history and my lists. That stuff, at last check, is saved for 9 months. And all you have to do to retain it is go back, pay for a month, and then you can unsubscribe again. So if you're kind of just thinking, because it's fair, right? If you have a list of stuff, you have your algorithm set, your profile set, but you're going, I'm not really watching Netflix right now because a new season of The Bear is coming and House of the Dragon is starting. And, or if you're like me, you're still watching Succession because I didn't start watching it until it finished. So I'm not actively using it. So I'm going to just stop paying it for like 2 months. But then I'll set a reminder in my calendar to go, oh, I better resubscribe to Netflix or I'll lose all my data. That's my kind of like, I will make them bow to me and be that person. Because they thrive on the... It's the same thing as gym memberships. They thrive on complacency as people signing up for this stuff and going, oh, it's fine. And I will continue to have that little bit of inconvenience to fight back against it.
As long as it makes you feel better.
It makes me feel better. If it saves me £15 a month every so often.
Hey, that's also a win.
Right? It is.
That's practically, what, two coffees at Costa?
If you drink coffee at Costa, yes.
Oh my god. Look, listen, we don't need to turn this podcast into a coffee snobbery fest, which I had a very brief affair with being a coffee snob, and it was very brief because I very quickly realized that if I am to be a coffee snob, I will not be able to drink coffee outside of my house. Mm-hmm. So thus, now I'm perfectly fine, which is whatever coffee people have. Because it is what it is, as long as, okay, you know, it's drinkable.
Yeah, that's fun.
Which, you know.
I thought you were going to say that, hey, I started making coffee at home to save myself money. Because that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. No.
I don't tend to... Oh, you'll dislike this a lot. I actually keep my setup at home so minimalistic, to the sense of because I'm the only one in the house that drinks coffee, so all I have, and please don't react too much, I just have instant coffee, like decaf instant coffee.
Okay. No one else in my house drinks coffee, but I have an entire corner of the kitchen dedicated to it still. Yeah, sorry, I'm really like hay fever today, so if I keep going on mute, that's why. I apologize. Oh god. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, okay. I can't wait for the editing then.
No, I know.
There's going to be a lot of sniffling that I need to
trying to like cut this bit. Okay. Oh dear.
I will learn the shape of your sniffles as well.
You will.
I'm telling you, like, sometimes this podcast feels like alarmingly intimate, because from time to time, like, I realize that I've never been this close to another human being, to the point where I can recognize their intake of breath via the shape of the sound wave. Speaking of mouth noises, I had a thing. We're staying at a hotel in Coventry for Evgeny's job, and I'm okay. You will now learn something about me, which might be counterintuitive to a lot of the work I do around this podcast, which is editing out mouth noises. I have a thing for mouth noises. I find them so incredibly unbearable when people around me do them. I blame my mum, by the way. She is much worse than me. I have fond memories, if you can call them fond memories, of me growing up. And obviously all kids go through this period of like slurping or making loud noises as they're eating or drinking or whatever. And mum would be on my case the entire time until I learned how to drink, eat, breathe quietly. So now I'm very good at that. Right. But what that meant is that that annoyance has now become my annoyance as well. So it was definitely a struggle with some people in my life as I got used to their specific, not you in particular, by the way, because this is not a jab at you in any way, shape or form.
I know it's not.
But this morning, oh my goodness. And this is I have to be very careful here. Because I know in some cultures, and I think these folks in particular that were in having breakfast alongside with us, they were of a specific culture where those type of noises are not only accepted but also are just part of the eating process. But I had to move us. I couldn't stand the poor lad next to us. He was just eating with his mouth, with open mouth. Right, that was it. That was just, I could hear every single bite he took and then continually chewed, and it drove me the wall. I just had to stand and just move. So, you know, after many years of being together, my partner just accepted this as a thing and then just got up, and we moved to the other end of the restaurant, and I could still hear them. I'm gonna sound like an absolute asshole. And I know that, but, you know, if you, dear listener, if you also have a thing for mouth noises, I just want to make, you know, Tim, if you have a thing for mouth noises, you're not alone. I also have a problem with them, and it's fine. You know, we're not weird. It's the other people that are weird. Do you want to talk about Demofest?
Yes, let's.
Did you watch Demofest?
I watched some.
You watched some. What yes. is your? I will be a very business person right now.
Yes.
What are your main key takeaways, Paul, from what the little content that you were able to catch live? Because I know you were busy.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm not bitter at all that you missed my session.
Well,
I'm joking.
No. It's fine. Someone can organize childcare. No, I think in all seriousness, DemoFest. This is going to sound like a really backwards compliment, but. It's not, and I think it's worth shouting out Sammy, who is the brains behind DemoFest, because the platform that I presume she found was really cool. Like, I don't know what it was called, as far as I'm aware.
Oh, the actual streaming.
The actual,
thing.
Like, streaming, being able to jump
Goldcast?
Between... Yeah, jump between
Goldcast
different tracks.
It's really good.
It was really impressive, and I think back to, like, the first DemoFest 4 years ago, when it was just... There was one track, and you would. I think it was on Zoom, potentially. I can't even remember now. But as a kind of a user experience, it was fantastic. The bit that I kind of was able to, and I think the reason purely is that it's obviously trying to cater to 5, 6, 7 time zones, probably more.
Yeah.
And 3 till 5 PM UK is like the window of time that I could join. And it was just unfortunate that I'd been on holiday the week before, so I was also really busy trying to catch up. And then the evening sessions, including yours, was just not a good time of day for me. Like, I kind of have that between 5 and 8 PM. I am very preoccupied, but the good thing is that I do know that all of the sessions are recorded, and I am looking forward. To
oh, I can't up. Wait! I can't wait to watch them at my own time and take my notes properly. It's like I honestly, and especially as a speaker, you get the negative side of things, which is you either are and I do this every year, even though I was really trying hard not to do it this year, but I still fell into this, which is you do two things: you before your session, you are preparing for it still last minute. As you do, and you don't want to watch too many of other people's sessions because they will very heavily influence what you're going to say, and you still want to obviously have your own ideas and not just be a parrot of everyone else's brilliant things that they say. And then also you have the post, having spoken for almost an hour in front of hundreds of people, just downward spiral of I can't listen to people speak anymore, nor can I talk myself, nor can I interact. And I just want to watch paint dry for the next 3 hours because I'm so overwhelmed. Because that's what I did. Not paint dry, but, you know, the YouTube equivalent of paint drying.
You need to just kind of be able to let go, to off ramp. And I think that's why you asked me, well, I'm not speaking at DemoFest. And that's one of the things that is not having that pressure to kind of prep and do. I think key takeaways, I would say a lot of discussion about the role, the changing role of sales, pre-sales, go-to-market, however you want to frame it, right? These people who are involved in selling products, services to businesses. And I think that encompasses the whole thing. And that is that not everybody agrees in the direction that we are taking, which was the analysis that I would say I had before.
Mm.
But it was interesting to see, and this is where being in the live event was good, is actually to see some of the conversation that people are having and like the side chat. And I think there was nothing I saw presented that was particularly controversial, but it's clear that not everybody agrees. And which is a good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
To burst that bubble, maybe. That I think there was perhaps a risk of falling into the... And you and I have spoken about this before, both on and off air, of we kind of get caught up in a nice little echo chamber of we all think this is the best thing in the world and we're all kind of going down this same track. The reality, and I think the size of something like DemoFest now, is it has an audience which makes you realize, oh no, hang on a minute, there's a lot of people out there that are not in that same place and that are not looking at things the same way that we are.
I think you're highlighting there a very specific topic that I think, and I agree with you, it felt like an overarching theme throughout a lot of the conversations, which is this merge or the spread of pre-sales across not just what is traditionally the solutions engineer, the sales engineer role, into customer success, going, you know, down the sales process, but then also marketing and how do we, you know, do the actual go-to-market element of it as well. And I think a lot of the presenters, we'll have this discussion again post the recordings being out and actually being able to refer to specific folks and what do they say and then, you know, having that more. But the general feeling was that a lot of the folks that at least I listened to all were in agreement that that's the direction that pre-sales is going, which is we will now sort of absorb or become a part of or should become a part of all of these different functions within the organization. And I'll be honest with you, maybe if you've asked me, let's say, 6 months ago, I would have wholeheartedly agreed with that. Now, with the hindsight of how the organization that I was working for behaved and looked like, having now spoken and worked with companies of all different shapes and sizes around their pre-sales team, I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all solution of just saying pre-sales have to, you know, or should be involved with everything. And it... Do you agree with that statement, or are you?
Yeah, I do, and I would agree. I'd agree that the presenters kind of were coming at it probably broadly from the same perspective, but also, and this isn't a criticism of any one individual. I think it's a symptom of this kind of echo chamber conversation, which is that, you know, pre-sales is naturally going to expand into the customer success sort of function. I just think there was a lot of people in the sort of the chat and some of the conversation around it kind of going, well, no, hang on, that's not what I want to do. And I've had some, I think it's hard for me to kind of differentiate the conversations I've had, like on LinkedIn about this with what was DemoFest and not conflate the two. But I would say in the general kind of sphere, this is the conversation. I would also say that the other kind of piece of it is the role of the sales engineer, solutions consultant, pre-sales, whatever you want to call it, is changing. And I think DemoFest reflected that in the fact that it wasn't just about the biggest pre-sales event. It was about buyer enablement. And that, I think, was very telling. But also within that, and I mentioned in the kind of our preview in the last episode that I was looking forward to Stefan's session, Stefan from IFS. And I was really interested because he kind of, I would recommend kind of going and reviewing what he talks about, but there's one comment he made that really resonated with me, about the experience that he saw implementing demo automation. And that was that not every pre-sales professional is good at it, bluntly, has that skill set. And I think that was the first time I'd actually heard somebody in that kind of forum go, this is not something everyone can do. And to expect to wholesale shift how you have your teams behave and act and engage to just over from what they do today to now being demo automation or whatever you want to call them, content creators, right? That's not a shift that is going to be right for everybody. And I think that actually then broadens out the conversation of, okay, we had this role that we call pre-sales, the sales engineer, and that did a certain number of functions. And we're now broadening that role out to a much wider sort of set of skills. And I think that what, you know, my takeaway was, well, in that we need to not limit what people's options are.
I think that's a really good take on the sense of, yes, if you have the capabilities and desires, you shouldn't be limited to, oh, but you are just a pre-sales person. You should stick in your lane and just do that.
I need to talk about what just happened, which is that, and that my brain went straight to this place, and your brain probably went the same place, which was, full transparency, if we can say, you're recording not at your normal location. I think we've just, the synchronicity here that of what has just happened, we're talking about DemoFest, and a fire alarm went off. I mean, the history.
There is nothing like a... Because I wasn't told, obviously, by the hotel staff that there's going to be testing today. And as you can imagine, a fire alarm, which you're not warned about, does activate you in a very special way. I am now so filled with adrenaline that I feel like I need a second to just sort of... I think my voice changed.
I guess it's that thing, isn't it? It's like, normally you wouldn't be in a, like, typically being in a hotel at 11 a.m. in the morning isn't something that most people, that's the time when the fewest guests are in.
Yeah.
So that's why it's just also like, I mean, it's good they're testing it, but.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
But a heads up would have been nice.
We're back in the room
after a involuntary, enforced break upon us. Due to hotel testing their fire alarms, which is great. Hey, at least I know in the case of a fire, I will now ignore it because I would just assume it's another test. So if there's no next episode, folks, you know what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so we're talking about DemoFest.
We were
talking about DemoFest and the direction where folks were, you know, expecting for pre-sales to actually take off towards and encompass more and more things. And yeah, completely, how to be politically correct about this. Because again, I agree, right? For some businesses, that absolutely works. But as I said, like, one size does not fit all. And I think that's the biggest challenge we're always going to have in a lot of these sessions and a lot of these, you know, you keep on referring to the echo chamber. I think that echo chamber is the critical element there, where you need to be very keenly aware, especially as someone who potentially has the influence to change how pre-sales leadership, pre-sales folks behave and think. I think that's something we need to be very aware of, to not all sing from the same book.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something I was very conscious as one of the speakers on that event. I was something I was fairly conscious of. I don't want to talk about customer success. I don't want to talk about marketing. I did talk about demo automation in the context of, you know, where does whiteboarding and all of these presentation skills actually fit into this world that seemingly everyone talks about, and how to maintain that very key human connection with those tools. In a future where we are, and we are seeing it, right? Like, a lot more companies, even though the percentages are still a little wild, like, I think it was about like 40% of all companies who have done, and I do want to highlight this, who have done the consensus reports, questionnaire, right? So what I imagine is a lot of folks who are already aware of demo automation have answered that and are willing to do that, have said that they don't have demo automation yet. I imagine the percentage in reality outside of that report and that study is a lot more.
Yep.
Like a lot more companies are not even aware or interested or have demo automation in their vision in any way, shape or form. I can imagine, especially like the big tech companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot harder for them to see the benefit of putting a tool in place, which especially it's not their own tool. Like I imagine the likes of Microsoft, of Google, right? I don't envision them using any of the currently existing demo automation tools that we have in place. There could be pockets of it, right, in specific teams that have their own budget and are able to purchase it themselves. But overall, as a company, I wouldn't imagine them actually having a vision of something like that if it's not their own.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I'm saying that is because at VMware, we had they still exist, the hands-on labs, right? So a lot of this demo automation or this experience that you want to give people, we were facilitating that via hands-on experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So that was out of the pushback I was getting, which is, but we already have this stuff that we are hosting, that we have the technical ability to do ourselves. Why would we pay someone else to do something a little bit? Like, whilst I don't think they cover the same use cases, by the way, and that was my biggest argument for demo automation within VMware, for a lot of these bigger companies, especially tech companies, that's not something in their interest. So I do think the number, when we're talking about demo automation, it's again, it feels a little bit like we're still in an echo chamber of, you know, even DemoFest itself, hosted by Consensus, who are a demo automation company.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the conversation is going to be heavily adjusted based on the people who are A, aware of this event and are going to be joining it. You know, at the very least, they would know what, you know, who Consensus are and would have a vague interest in potentially utilizing those set of abilities.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna pull up what might be a slightly strange analogy here, but it's kind of a mixture of understanding what's currently happening today in the UK and over the next 5.5 weeks and with what we're talking about in the echo chamber. Now, I appreciate there are people who listen from outside the UK may not be aware we are currently in the early stages of a general election, and there is a common assumption that the governing party are probably going to lose quite badly and that the opposition party are going to win in quite a large way. What I've been thinking about over the weekend with it is the conversations no one seems to be having at the moment is that we're going to risk a hegemony of one group of people with one set of ideas. And actually, what that's risking is not having a credible opposition. The part of that, right, that we have is you can have these great ideas and you can be forward-thinking and revolutionary, but I would say really even the last like 3 to 6 months, as I've been reading for pleasure, right, outside of, we've talked before about the kind of stuff I like to read, and I like reading political history, particularly things like the French Revolution, as well as more contemporary stuff. And the time when stuff goes wrong is when there's no credible opposition to ideas. And I feel like that's where we have a unique set of circumstances here, which is that actually the opposition to these ideas sort of doesn't quite exist. And it's not an opposition in being a wholly negative thing, right? This isn't about being the opposite of saying demo automation to the future. But instead it's about saying these are all great ideas, but as you are actually just alluding to, we need to be aware that it's not gonna be one size fits all.
Yeah. I think that's a hard conversation to have in a bubble, because you almost sound like you're being adversary for adversary's sake. Because if it seems like everyone around us tends to, at least in public forum, right? I haven't had the chance to really to actually meet up, and that's why I'm really looking forward to the London get together towards the tail end of the year. I would be really keen to hear from actual people face to face. What is their perception and where do they actually see things going? Because again, I think it's very easy to take a safe option when you're doing a public speaking thing or just publishing things on, you know, on social media and talking about these sort of things online. It's a lot harder to be potentially controversial. And I think that's why, like, one of the many reasons I do, I'm very keen on, you know, post us reviewing the content from DemoFest to actually have a more, you know, because right now it's sort of like, you know, we're basing it on the feeling, right? Oh, the feeling, you know, that we got from going through a couple of sessions is this, right? So it's not really, I wouldn't say it's objective, mm-hmm. because just we don't have all of the speakers, all of the opinions, all of, like, you know, what people are talking about. But for now, that has really been my general feel about what the event has been about and where people were actually directing the conversations towards. But yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as well, because as time has kind of gone on with the event, and we've seen it evolve, the conversation has clearly evolved, has moved on. But I think that, as you were kind of saying, the problem with being a speaker is that if you engage in other content, you end up sort of saying your own, or you react to what other people have said, because that's a natural thing to do. And also, it's not the kind of platform, like you say, where you necessarily want to sort of stand up and be super controversial. You want to be coming and presenting your ideas, and it's not necessarily that kind of forum. I think what's interesting about the way that you present is that you actually position what are quite challenging ideas, but in a way that doesn't feel like we're being challenged. Does that make sense?
That's a really nice piece of feedback. Thank you.
You're welcome. But it's true. I think because if you talk about it, if I think about your whole, the ethos of whiteboarding, you could present that in two quite different ways. There's the way that you're presenting it, which is that, hey, here's a super creative way to differentiate what you do and how you work. The other way you could do it is go, no one wants slides. Slides suck. No one wants live demos. They're boring. Which is not untrue. But there's a way that you can convey that message. And I think that's the other thing that I would say what I thought was good about DemoFest this year is that it didn't feel, and it never has, this year, I've never felt this about DemoFest, but I have felt this about other events that I've been to, which is that there's a sort of aspect of telling people off.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. And I haven't felt it. I think you're right. I haven't felt it at any of the DemoFest that I have participated in. And I think that has a lot to do, if you consider who are the people presenting, it is people who are in pre-sales. And a big part of being in pre-sales is, obviously, you do not want to tell off the people that you're presenting to, because if they do feel told off, they will not buy from you. So I think it's a very natural language thing that we do as a training piece as we go through our career as pre-sales, is that we don't feel compelled to tell people off. I think it tends to be a lot more. I've seen it in incredibly, and again, it's not a catch-all phrase, right? And I don't mean everyone who's quite techie does this, but quite techie people do tend to have a lot stronger opinions of what's right and what's wrong.
Yes.
I think it's us pre-sales folks tend to be a little bit milder, because we have to be very keenly aware of what is the goal of our sessions, you know, be it customer-facing or be it peer-facing. Mm-hmm. But we just can't escape that mentality of, I'm not here to tell you how to do the thing. I am here to present to you a new idea. And I'm really happy that you've caught on to that, you know, during my sessions. And I think most of the presenters do that, at least the ones that I have seen.
Yes.
And I think it's a really important point to make, especially when you are, and I don't, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think a lot of the ideas that I present are controversial. I think you're right with the fact that they are difficult, because I do tend to be interested not in the practicalities of the day to day. I tend to be interested in the more human subjects that tend to be more difficult to capture. Because, and I'm not saying that the topics of how to actually implement specific tool sets or methodologies or anything like that is easy. It has its own challenges and everything. But I think having an abstract idea and an abstract problem like human connection, at least to me personally, it tends to be a lot more interesting to talk about and explore with the audience and the folks that are participating in the session, rather than just, this is what I've done in my previous role, and this is what, you know, these are the actions I took, and this is the result I got, and, you know, it's great. Try it yourself.
Mm.
It's more about having those stories as well, but also challenging the human element of the role, because it's hugely a human role. It's less, I would say, Well, actually, this is a good conversation. I would say pre-sales is the majority is human communication. I would say 70%, which is a huge element. 30% is about understanding the tech and actually being, you know, and actually implementing it and understanding and talking to people about implementing it. 70% is about human communication.
I would say even more. I would say 80% is communication.
Oh, okay.
Really? Like,
I thought it was being...
No.
A little bit...
I really think that to be successful in pre-sales is not about understanding what your product does. It's about how it helps people. And those are two different things. And I've seen this kind of firsthand where I've had real success in positioning solutions that I do not understand how to use on a technical level. But I understand what they deliver. I understand why is this important, that what's the kind of functionality, what is the capability that this brings? What can this person I'm speaking to, what would they be able to do tomorrow with this that they can't do today without it? And that's that human connection thing. And I think you're right on that selling as a whole, right, is about human connectivity. And there's the push to talk about ourselves as consultants. And I dislike the consultant term. I find it is almost too abstract, and I think some of that abstraction is as the result of it kind of being used as a kind of catch-all for functions of many types, right? Be they business, be they medical, be they kind of human, right? Consulting is something, it means many things to many people. But I do understand why people like it semantically, because they're saying, oh, what I want to do is communicate with people and understand how to help them and get to a resolution for them. And I think that's also where it kind of comes down to. And back really with, I guess, the overarching takeaway for me from DemoFest and a lot of it is that we have this sort of technical revolution coming. Or you could say it's here, right? It's happening now. The way people do things is changing. But at the core of that, it's people's behaviour is changing. And actually, we would do well to look at this from a behavioural psychology perspective as much as from a tech stack perspective and as a showy, hey, do this. Now you can do this. Here's how you can apply your best practices in how you operate doing live demos to demo automation, and that's all very practical, pragmatic stuff. But if we don't understand the why and the behavioural kind of insights behind it, I still think it's going to be, we're going to struggle to optimise doing that thing.
I have the word consultant. That's very strange. I wonder if it's because I'm a non-native English speaker. The word consultant is very simplified in my head, which is whatever it is you're doing is about understanding and bettering the people you are talking to. That's why I like the idea of consulting. You know, when you mentioned like medical field, it's like, yeah, that's literally it. That is my impression of consulting. That's why I've always been a fan of the idea of solution consulting, right? Whilst I also like the term buyer enablement, because I think it really solidifies that idea that we're not there for ourselves, we're there for other people. I think consulting is also a very powerful term. And I know this is a well-trodden territory about what it should be called. If it was up to me, consulting would be the key word there. What's before that doesn't matter. You know, you can be technology consultant, solution consultant, whatever, right? The word ahead of that doesn't matter. But that consulting piece is really what we should be focusing on. And that, I think, solves a lot of this mentality of, like, where do we belong in a... Because I think that's the crux of the matter. It's like, where do we belong in a tech company that's selling a product? Where do pre-sales people sit? And the name pre-sales has done, I think, the role a disservice, because it's sort of like, oh, you're just going to be as part of the sales part, where you just go and talk to the customer, and at that point, like, that is it. That is all you do. And I still think that works for a lot of companies. But I think the consultancy piece is what this whole conversation around marketing and customer success and pre-sales working together. The answer really to that in my head is very simple, and it, you know, I might be oversimplifying it for my own sake, is that role, which is consultant. Flare it as you want, you know, describe it as you wish. But if your role at the end of the day is for, you know, if your company is selling products and you are there to make sure that the product keeps on being sold and used, especially important nowadays with the whole ARR thing, you are a consultant in my eyes.
It's a compelling argument. And the thing that I struggle with whenever I have this, and it's very much an internal debate. I haven't really had a conversation in detail with anybody about it, right? Saying, hey, this is the way we're now going to do things, you know, moving forwards. It's always been a, well, yeah, it might be this, it could be that. But actually, when I think about, you know, well, what else could it be? And I really struggle to find another word. And as a native industry, like...
Other than consultant.
Other than consultant, yeah. Like, if not consultant, then what? Is the argument I have with myself. And go,
yeah.
If you're going to challenge this, and I would say this is, again, if you're going to come in and challenge, back to this, to the idea of opposition, I think it's important to have opposing ideas to what seems to be the kind of the wave and the direction of travel. But you have to ask yourself, as a part of that, okay, if not that, then what?
Mm-hmm.
And if not consultant, then what?
And that's what we currently have. It's the then what is now,
yes.
Which is a mix and match of engineer, architect, however you want to, you know, depending on the level of, you know, again, every company has its own thing. I think it sounds very funny. But, like, you know, oh, yeah, we just solved the problem with the naming. Just call it consultants. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
but really, in my head, it's that simple. And I know it's you know, there's always, you know, I even have the meme in my head. It's like, it's not that simple. I know it's not that simple. And I appreciate that. But I think a lot of the issues and a lot of the you know, even the fact that we're having so many conversations about, like, what's the role and where can we impact, you know, where can we have the biggest impact as the professionals or as the set of skills that your average pre-sales person have, which, again, by the way, are not the same everywhere.
Mm.
And I think that's a lot of what, you know, the conversation we were just having around, you know, content creation and demo automation. It's like, yeah, we don't all have the same set of skills. Can we all agree that consultative skills are important? Yes, right? That's a given. We understand that. Especially as companies are moving in towards a subscription model, that is mandatory. You're no longer a seller. You're no longer a touch base, you know, touch one point in the sales funnel. You do your magic, you do your demo and you leave. That is no longer the case.
Mm.
That is just simply not something that companies, the tech companies, are interested in doing anymore. Because that's not where, you know, to dig even deeper, like, you know, that's not what Wall Street wants, right?
No.
Wall Street wants investors. They want a company that is proven to make money consistently. And you don't do that by selling a big license, you know, 1 year and then having a 4-year contract. You do that by having a subscription model. Mm. That's why everyone is shifting to that. So with that shift, I think that that consultants piece is really starting to be highlighted. Because again, we are no longer pre-sales. I think that's a given. I think that's something that fundamentally I don't see an argument against, even within, like, you know, similar to you, like, I always try to have, like, contractive opinions within my own head. But I think the pre-sales part is something that needs to go.
Yeah.
We are no longer pre-sales.
Mm-hmm.
That word doesn't mean anything in the current market as we stand. I would argue solutions is also like a term that's, you know, what does solutions mean? But sure, right? Let's keep it at that. But it's that consultancy piece that I think the more I speak to you, the more I'm thinking this through right now, like vocalizing my thoughts, the more I'm sort of doubling down on it as the term.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised nobody spoke about this at demo. Like, you know, again, I reviewing the footage, like I will go through the sessions to see if people speak about this. But the sessions that I was a part of, like, I didn't hear people talk about consulting in particular.
Yeah, I think it's less the consultant piece I have an issue with. It's more the solutions term and going, everything is solutions. And you think that, again, maybe feels too abstract. And the other thing, I agree that we need to remove pre-sales, but the problem that we will inevitably, the problem there is that we need to not get ahead of ourselves in that conversation. And I think that's the biggest risk, is that we get very excited, we get very much this is the future and this is where it should be, and oh, why is my company still talking about pre-sales and the pre-sales team? And the reality is, this is something that's going to take a long time to change. It's not going to happen overnight. Some of it is going to be a generational shift that we currently still have leadership that can conceive of pre-sales in the traditional functions. And as much as we can change what we do, that's always going to be limited. And I think quite often, and again, this idea of, you know, implementing some of these changes in big organizations, a lot of this is going to end up just being tinkering at the edges. It's not going to be this big shift in how everything operates. It's not going to be this kind of transformational move.
But
I think it's important to remember that. And actually, for folks listening, for Tim, for Tom, for Tim and Tom, don't be disheartened by the fact that you can't enact a massive transformational change. If you can change just how your part of the business does it, great, right?
I'll take it one step further. If you can change, and I think, again, that's always my intention with a lot of the sessions that I do for DemoFest. If there is something that you can change,
yes,
as an individual contributor, as the person actually on the field, your title is not going to change, most likely. To be completely pessimistic, like I think it's going to be, you know, until the people that are speaking these things right now get into leadership positions, it's not going to change. And even then, I fear that just the inertia of the current iteration. Because the thing is, let's be very clear, right? Taking a step back, nothing is broken. That's the biggest crux. Nothing is broken. Why would anyone fix it? Things still work. Things still happen. So why would an organization shuffle and change things drastically if it's not broken?
Yeah.
So let's be, you know, if I'm being incredibly pessimistic about things, and I know, again, going back to DemoFest, a lot of the sessions were talking to sales and pre-sales leadership. I'm going to take a little bit of a pessimistic route here and go like, I don't think anything is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that leave you, Tim? That leaves you with the ability to just change yourself. And I do truly believe that at any organization, at any size, right, coming in from, you know, obviously speaking to Paul, who has worked in, you know, different size companies, then coming in from me, working at a behemoth of a tech company, the result is still the same. The only thing you can change is your own behavior. And then reap the results from that. So if your title, even if it never changes from solution engineer or, you know, pre-sales engineer or whatever your title officially is, in your mind, that's where the shift has to be. The shift has to be from, I am no longer just a touch point demo monkey of like, hi, I'm gonna present this to you today in 45 minutes. So go through all the features and functions. And to start thinking consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's revolutionary or anything groundbreaking there to say. But it's just, again, refocusing on what's really actionable right now. And I don't think that a lot of the time we're spending trying to convince leadership is well worth it. Because, again, nothing's broken.
Mm-hmm.
People still sell. Money's being made. ARR is working. We're bringing in customer success to, you know, help enable that. We have the marketing team that are obviously working in one way or another. We have the pre-sales team that do their thing. We see value in them.
Mm-hmm.
So why shuffle things?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a point in shuffling things.
Mm-hmm.
For the sake of a revolution? Nah.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. It's funny because you obviously took the words out of my mouth.
Sorry.
No, not in a bad way. But everyone talks about like, oh, how are we going to change the world? And it's like, well, you can change the world by just changing what you do because you're changing something about the world. Right, changing the world isn't...
You're changing your own world.
Yeah, but you're changing your own world, but again, not to kind of get too sort of metaphysical about it. You are changing the world because you are a part of the world, and by changing what you do in your world, you're therefore changing the whole world.
I'm really happy we had this conversation because it's really solidifying something in my head, which is my ongoing mission to be focusing on the individual, not the organization. And secondly, is to actually finally in my head put a term that I'm happy with, because I keep on bouncing between terms, right? And I find that incredibly frustrating because I don't like not having continuity in the way I present things, the way I speak to people about. I think consultant is going to be my word going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, you heard it here first, folks. Consultant. Whatever the term is going to be for it, doesn't matter. Consultant. We are consultants.
Mm-hmm.
I will teach you to be better consultants. That is what is going to happen.
Well, people talk about consultative selling, and I think it's interesting because what I again say, you know, reflections on, and I certainly agree, once we've been able to kind of review the recordings and we can go and do a deeper dive on the sessions that we have kind of got more specific takeaway from, is that, you know, you're not, consultative selling is not a new concept, but that also is about recognizing and giving people the information that's relevant to them at the right time, and doing so in a way that reflects their needs. And demo automation and asynchronous communication and asynchronous selling is absolutely a part of that. Because, you know, consultative selling once upon a time was going into lots of detail, doing really technical deep dives, giving people a ton of information. Consultative selling now, there's still an aspect of that, but it's also about knowing what people want and giving them the information to consume it themselves. You'll still be a consultant. You're still consulting with people. And actually the most effective consultants are the ones who reflect that things change and that the needs of the people they're working with change. And again, I am increasingly looking at ways that I can behave and do and act differently. Because, yeah, you can't, trying to change the extrinsic factors is much, much harder than trying to change the intrinsic factors. And you can change, to your point, how you behave. You can't directly change how others behave, but you can influence it, but you can't make them act differently, but you can make yourself act differently. And maybe that's the future direction that we need to be looking at, right? Is how do you change what you do?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. As a little bit of a pre-DemoFest conversation review.
Yes.
Of the footage.
As a first no, round of DemoFest review.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, because, there's so much. There's so much always at these events. It's just incredible. Oh, by the way, I have made a decision. I think pretty, you know, I think I have made a decision, which is that I will not be presenting at DemoFest London. I will not be putting a topic forward because I want to actually, as I mentioned earlier and alluded to, I do want to have a lot more face-to-face conversations with different individuals across that field. And I think presenting at the event takes away so much of that energy that I do need to actually talk to people. That is, so, you know, if folks ever need a plug for to watch like the recording of my DemoFest session, this is the thing. This might be, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be the last one, obviously, the last one ever, but it's definitely going to be the only one for this year. So if you are interested in seeing what I had to say this year, we're gonna start linking things when they start showing up. Oh, I don't know, maybe when we actually publish this episode, they will already be out. So we'll be able to link to it. Paul, you want to talk to me about AI?
I do. Let's talk about AI. Well, this is kind of been prompted by the fact, well, of course, AI again. So I don't know if you've seen the video that our good friend Elon Musk has raised, I think, yeah.
I almost spit my coffee into my Mac.
So, future Supreme Overlord Elon Musk. what would be a good, I'm trying to think of an apt description for him. Hang on, one moment. I have to just check something.
Please open up ChatGPT.
No. Future or current Hank Scorpio wannabe Elon Musk. if you don't know who Hank Scorpio was, he was the evil. I was just like, what is his name? I can picture him. A friend of mine will hate me for not getting this straight away. He was the evil genius and millionaire owner of the Globex Corporation, who quite literally lives in a volcano. It's a Simpsons reference.
Oh, right.
It's a Simpsons reference. But
it's like the old-timely evildoer that lives in a lair underneath the volcano.
Who is a successful businessman.
Yeah. And makes a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
money. No, Musk reminds me of, like, Hank Scorpio, but in kind of a bad way. But anyway, enough about that. He's secured a massive round of funding for his ex-AI and is now promising AGI next year. That's what kind of prompted me on this whole conversation about AI, because I've been thinking about this has prompted me to think about AI. And we've talked about it over the last kind of few episodes, you know, maybe finding the reasons why I'm a pessimist around it, maybe finding an actual good use for it. And I think I've landed on my kind of my core problem with it, at least the direction that it's maybe taking, and also the kind of benefits for it and how I'm looking at it. So the best quote that I've seen, and I unfortunately cannot credit this, if I do find the person to whom I can credit it, I will add in the show notes, but is, I always thought that when the robots came, they would do all the boring mundane jobs and leave the fun creative stuff for us, but it seems like it's going the other way. People are obsessed with AI either as a creative shortcut tool or as a, and this is probably a topic that we could get into in a lot more detail, as a fulfillment of some kind of sci-fi fantasy. Literally what unfolded with GPT-4o and Scarlett Johansson. It's like we're developing it to fulfill some fantasy that we've had.
I'll be honest with you, and this whole Scarlett, because that one did hit my radar. I try to, you're a lot more worldly than me. I don't tend to watch a lot of news or be invested in a lot of things like that. But I did see the Scarlett Johansson thing hit my radar.
Should I summarize it in brief?
Go on.
Very, very briefly. There's a very good film called Her, which came out, I think, 10 years ago, in which Scarlett Johansson voices is the voice of a voice assistant. Go watch the film, because the other point that I've heard made by numerous people is that it feels like these people developing it, they don't watch the end of these films. They don't have a good ending, generally. Anyway, OpenAI then released ChatGPT with chat, with voice assistants, one of them whom sounded suspiciously like Scarlett Johansson. Turns out Sam Altman, CEO of OpenAI, had approached her last year to voice one of these AI assistants, and she said no, and there's been a massive controversy, and it's like, they're like, oh, it's just a coincidence that she happens to sound a lot like it, and our CEO tweeted her when we released it, and has talked about how he loves this film that she voices an AI in.
Yeah, but wasn't it proven that it wasn't the case?
It's dodgy.
Right.
It's like, oh, what a coincidence that you just happened to get a voice actress who sounds a lot like this person. You know, just...
Yeah, no, but the intention is there, right?
Yeah.
Like, regardless of what the actual legal result of this is going to be, I think the intention was clear. Well, I hear your pessimism, and let me dissect that a little bit, because it feels like, you know what, at this point, this feels like AI therapy. It's like we have like a section where we're just a new thing comes up, and we're just like, okay, so let's try to talk it through. Let's use some tools, let's think about it in a specific way. So let's start from the start then. I do think. Yeah, and I love the quote about, you know, they were supposed to take away the boring stuff, and yet here we are, you know, trying to shove them creativity. I think that's a natural response of people who struggle with the creative side. And I think we've mentioned this a couple of times, that I do not want to use anything when it comes to the creativity, because in comparison to the stuff I can create, it does not come near, both on the, you know, artistic quality, both on the writing quality, both on anything like that. Just none of the tools out there are remotely close to what my desired level of quality is for the things that I produce. That's it. It's not comparable. So I will not use any of those tools, because they are just, honestly, they just don't do the job of what I want them to do on the creative side. If I could extract my brain and all of my thoughts into a machine and it can produce things for me, great, but it can't. And until that happens, I don't want any part of that. That's a whole different other avenue of dystopian future, which I will not go down that that staircase right now, because I can see it right in front of me, and I will take a step back. But that is the only option that I will be happy with. On the other hand, I am shocked by the lack of tooling out there, and I know why. It's because this stuff is actually the hard stuff, right? Because right now what we're seeing is the easy wins. right? It's just like, oh, I'll set up a company that can do this super easy thing good enough just to sell some stuff, sell some licenses, and then people will stop paying me, you know, but I'll make some money out of it from just the, you know, a GPT integration. I want things that will be able to summarize my emails for the day. And I think Microsoft are working on stuff like that for Outlook. I think Google are working on stuff about Gmail. That's why they're, you know, they want to feed Gmail data into a model and see what comes out. I'll be honest with you, that's the sort of stuff that I would absolutely love for me not to have to do. If I had an assistant that just responds, like an AI assistant that just responds to all of my email and then gives me a summary of what are the actions required, or I will feed it, like, or even better, it knows my calendar, it knows what my important things are for the week, and it just does all of that stuff for me, I would absolutely pay good money for that. Yet, why is nobody developing that AI assistant, or why is it not out there already? But we have a billion and one tools that can do content writing and video creation. Why is that a case? I don't know. I don't like it.
So
that is not what I want to use AI for.
No, I agree. And I think we're kind of aligned and having seen the result of Copilot in Teams and summarizing Teams recordings, very powerful, right? Super helpful. Transcription, summarizing transcripts, summarizing large chunks of text into an easy to digest piece, absolutely. And you can kind of call it AI, because that's obviously the, I think we've discussed before, right, that I just think it's just kind of, a lot of it is kind of robotic process automation, just with a different label on the top, and it's like mass data processing, and that's absolutely the niche it fits in. The creative stuff gets headlines, but
yeah.
It doesn't have, I don't think it, I don't know how much it has behind it, maybe. I think if you, and you know, I've talked to previously, right, I'm still using Motion. I think that is the most applicable use of anything with AI in it that I've found for me. And I do think that...
Yeah, but you know what? I want Motion. I want something like Motion. You know, so this is my dream. If there is a tool out there like this and people who listen like have seen it and use it, please, please, please recommend it to me. I'm looking for recommendations. I want something that's going to absorb all of my admin work into one place. I want something that can read my email. I want something that can read my calendar. I want something that in the morning, I want the Jarvis in the morning to ask me, oh, what is the most important thing for you today to achieve? And if I say, I don't know, I want it to go like, okay, so you have this business goal that you have told me about. Is there something that you want to do about that today? Is there, you know, I've checked through your emails. You have 3 emails from Paul. Two of them have actionable items. Do you want to actually pursue those this morning? I want that. That is what I want. Bonus points if it sounds like Scarlett Johansson, but you know.
I think we should say we're recording just ahead of WWDC, which happens in 12 days'
time.
Oh,
I can't wait.
Right, and there's definitely going to be AI stuff in there.
This is yet another rabbit hole that we can't go into. But I cannot wait because Apple were forced against the wall to talk plainly about AI, because they've been doing ML stuff for like so many years now. And I have a thing that, you know, people keep on saying like, oh, Apple is not doing AI, they're behind. That's not the case. Apple have been doing this stuff. They have just not been calling it AI. Sparkle, sparkle, spark, right?
Yeah.
They've been calling it other bits. But the fact that like the last 3 generation or 4 generation, don't quote me on that, but you know, there has been many generations now. There is a specific chip in my Mac right now that its whole purpose is ML and AI model implementation. That is what it does. If they're using it for specific services for Apple only right now, but they do have those capabilities and they've been testing them and throwing things at them for many years now, including, you know, that really cool function of just taking pictures like and making them into stickers. That is what they've been using this stuff for. They've been testing it and trialing it out and seeing how it works for so many years now. And I know I'm getting like really riled up because I really dislike when people just like, oh, but it doesn't have the keyword that I'm looking for. Like, we're not search engine like indexes people. Like, think about it for a second. Just because it doesn't have AI in the name. But now, to go back to like the original thing, Apple have been forced to start using an AI and start showcasing a lot more obvious to the consumer what is the thing that they've been doing in the background. And I cannot wait to see more about that, because that is it. That is literally what I want. I want Apple to take all of the data they have on me, because I am incredibly invested into the Apple ecosystem. I have everything in it. I want them to take everything they know about me, and just create and give me Siri that is actually intelligent enough for me to use her as I would be Iron Man using Jarvis. That is what I want.
That is, can we have good Siri, please? Is now,
Basically, I want good Siri.
I would say, funnily enough, I agree with you that like, people are like, Apple's behind. Apple's, it's like, no, they've been doing it for years. And actually, if you look at the Reminders app, and if you go and use the grocery list option, that is AI, because you can input, you know, here's the things I need to buy, and it will categorize for you automatically the sections of the shop, the supermarket that you should be going to. That is AI, right? It's keyword recognition and categorization by algorithm, which is what AI does. The thing actually, again, if I look at the rumors for WWDC, it's things like summarizing notifications, transcription for the voice memo app. Like, again, good Siri, basically. A voice assistant that when you ask it a question, doesn't go, here's what I found on the web. I didn't ask you to look up the web, and it's, I remember when it first came out, 11 years ago, scarily enough, the thing that was like, you could ask it, you'd have to like go in and prompt. And I remember when the voice prompt thing became huge, and now it just feels so obvious. But the fact that it used to have to be like a button you had to press to go in and do it, and now you can just call it up. It was like, oh, I can look up recipes. And that was like super helpful at the time. But now, as you say, like Jarvis is the thing that I think most people want. I think also if someone can come up with a way, and it must be possible, to just have Matter work properly, that I can connect the variety of smart devices. Going back to, I think, episode 1 or 2, when we had this conversation, just make my stuff work better together, please.
Oh, that's a completely different ballgame. No, again, I don't even want all of my stuff. I just want to start with, you know, with just my phone. I want to be able to, my phone in the morning, to tell me things. And I know, again, they, if you duct tape and bubblegum things together, that you can't get a version of this. No, I want an inbuilt within the Apple ecosystem that I can just have something in the morning, again, like a personal assistant, like a virtual assistant, that I just have a brief chat in the morning and I go like, these are my energy levels for today, right? Mm-hmm. You have access to my calendar. You know what's happening today. Can you make sure that this is, again, imaginary scenario, right? But this is what I would love to happen. I want, in the morning, after my alarm goes off, I want a very pleasant voice. Again, Scarlett Johansson, I would love to have that. Just tell me in the morning to go like, good morning, Lydia. Your sleep was okay today. Judging by previous experiences, you will be quite productive today. You have 3 meetings scattered throughout the day. Do you want me to rearrange them for later in the afternoon? So this morning you can focus on what is most important to you, which, based on previous conversations we have, are these 3 things. And I will block that in your calendar. How does that sound? That is what I want, Paul. Like, I want that conversation. And for me to go like, actually, no, I know the data says I slept well. Actually, I'm feeling a bit meh this morning. I'm going to go for an hour walk first, and then I want everything else to be. Can you make sure that you message folks that are in those meetings? Like, I agree for the you know, things in the afternoon. Can we do that, please? And I want it just to do that. That is what I want. And I don't see why we don't have the tools right now. Like, it feels like we're so close, yet so far.
I think we're getting there. I think
rant's over.
I know. Lydia rants. That's just the title of it. Lydia. For the first time in 15 hours, it was your turn. I think we're getting there. And again, I think the way that we can influence this is, like we've been saying the whole episode, seek out ways to use it and use it in the way that you want it to work, because that will then drive adoption in that way. And if I think about, I guess the final thing I'll say on this is that we've seen Microsoft have announced their like range of Copilot enabled PCs with the Copilot button. That again is where I think we're starting to, I want to make my life, I want to say, to help. And the best thing is Google Photos has done this. I think it may be US only. I haven't yet tried it. But it has this ability to look through all your photos. And say you need to you've walked into a building and it says, please enter your car registration. And if, like me, you've recently bought a new car slash you have a terrible memory for remembering your car registration, you take a photo of it. But rather than having to remember to do that every single time, you walk in and go, oh, what is my license plate? You search license plate and Google goes, here's the photo of your license plate. Knowing and recognizing that that is the license plate for the car and you know that's yours, it's simple things like that. It's when I am searching the file system for a document, being able to say, I last worked on it at this time and it probably has these keywords in it. I can't remember what I called it. Can you find it for me? Find it. That's what I want. All right. It's genuinely removing those pains. I don't need it to write content for me. I don't need it to write LinkedIn posts for me. I don't need it to create bad art. I just need it to actually help.
I do just realize we keep on talking to Tim. I want to talk to a specific Tim. Tim Cook, if you're listening to this, buddy. I want you to listen very carefully here. I want better Siri. That is all I want. That is all I've ever wanted. So Tim?
Johnny Ive, everyone wants better Siri. If you don't listen to us, listen to Neil Patel at The Verge. He just says, please make Siri good. Then we'll be happy. And I will forever tell everyone how it's great. And I don't need like fancy jazzy stuff. I just need it to just work.
I will sell my soul for a better Siri. Soul for Siri. That's what I want.